Welcome back in Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubal here with you until 1 a.m. I saw a story today that made me reach out to our buddy Mike Wall at space.com because this cracks me up. We're talking so much about space and all the things going on and the tourism and everything else that's possibly going to be possible, going to Mars and all these great things. And we hear so much about Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos when it comes to this. And a name I quite honestly had not heard for a while or hadn't paid much attention to was Richard Branson. And he was kind of at the forefront for this, I think a few years ago when he launched Virgin Galactic. And I just feel like I haven't heard much. Now there's a great CNBC story about, you know, these two are both supposed to take their big space flights in the coming weeks. And now their companies are sort of battling to whose flight is more important. Joining us, of course, is our buddy Mike Wall, a senior writer at space.com. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I think it's pretty funny that, you know, there's a lot of really interesting stuff. And as I read the story, I was thinking, God, these billionaires, maybe they're so full of themselves or whatever it is, but they really are pushing the frontier. There's stuff being done that NASA is always just battling for funding. And it really, I think, you know, you could talk about they should be spending money on saving this or doing this or all this. These billions of dollars could be spent for all these good things on Earth. Of course they could, but they're not. They are, you know, pushing us further and further into the frontier. I mean, it really is, if you just look at the space area and technology and how far we can get and how far we go, it really is good that they're out there spending this money and pushing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's an area that needs as much funding as it can get. I mean, I care deeply about Earth and the environment and lots of things that are going wrong here on Earth. But, you know, I mean, space expenditures have traditionally been very, very small compared to other outlays of the U.S. government. You look at our defense budget, it's like $700 billion. And then, I mean, NASA gets about $20 billion a year in the recent past. And then you get people like Jeff Bezos, and he's spending $1 billion per year by himself on his spaceflight company, Blue Origin. And that's significant. You know, you can do a lot with that. And he is like building this new spaceflight system that's going to launch people to suborbital space. And that's just the start for Blue Origin's plans. They aim to help, like, kind of jumpstart the off-Earth economy and do space mining and start up these giant space colonies that will house millions of people eventually and all that stuff in the far future. But this is like a first step, getting paying customers to go to suborbital space. And it's pretty funny. We're at a really important point in that part of his business because he announced a couple months ago that they're going to launch their first crewed space flight. You know, they're going to put people on their spacecraft for the first time on a July 20th flight. And he then revealed a little later that he's going to be one of those people. So he's launching to space on July 20th. And then just a week or so ago, Richard Branson comes out and says, I'm going to space with Virgin Galactic on July 11th and beating Bezos by 9 days. And yeah, it is pretty funny. You know, we have all these billionaires doing their thing in space, and they're still managing to kind of battle it out for supremacy and primacy and all the rest of it. It's pretty interesting.
Mike, I don't know how much you actually pay attention to the business aspects of that, but I didn't realize he's spending, Blue Origin, Bezos' company, is spending $100 billion a year. And I didn't realize that's five times the funding NASA gets. So how is he doing that? Because he's worth an insane amount of money, but even for Bezos, $100 billion a year is going to drain his reserves pretty quickly. Is Blue Origin owned by Amazon? Do you know how that funding is actually working?
No, he's spending just $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Just $1 billion. So what he said is that he's selling off $1 billion worth of Amazon stock every year, and okay, He's using that to fund what Blue Origin's doing.
I thought you said $100 billion. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's spending $1 billion. NASA gets about $20 billion a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And in Elon Musk, and is he spending about the same, about $1 billion a year? And are any of these guys finding, I imagine they'll take a loss for a certain amount of time, but they're already getting deals with NASA and other things like that. Like, are these companies possibly going to be profitable at some point?
That's the hope. Obviously, these billionaires don't want to always be kind of funding everything out of pocket. Just recently, Virgin Galactic went public, like, I believe. And so that raised a lot of money for them. So it's not all coming out of Richard Branson's pocket anymore. A lot of it's coming from investors now and so on. And that's the route. And with a company like, actually, SpaceX is a different story because they're fully up and running, right? They have a lot of NASA contracts. They've launched 3 astronaut missions to the space station already, and they do lots of satellite launches to Earth orbit. So So they have a pretty substantial revenue stream already, whereas like Virgin Galactic and also Blue Origin are just starting to get up and running now. So they're in a different position than SpaceX is.
Speaking of that, I have a colleague I work with out in Colorado, and she's like way out in, you know, some middle of nowhere Colorado. And so when we're on these Zoom calls, she's always like a second or so behind, and it's frustrating. And she said that she had tried to get hooked up to the Skylink thing or whatever. I forget which, if that's Elon Musk or Bezos's company doing this whole satellite thing. Where is that at? And is that something that's going to really take hold and people are going to be able to use, especially people in remote areas? And how good will that be?
That's the plan, actually. Elon Musk, that's the SpaceX system, Starlink. They've already launched thousands of these satellites to low Earth orbit, more than 1,500, actually, of these satellites to Earth orbit. And the plan is that there will be enough of them eventually to cover the entire Earth with these broadband signals, and it'll be cheap and fast internet. And so you can get a hold of that internet anywhere, even if you're out in rural areas or really far from the big city, whatever, you'll still have fast internet. You know, it's in, like, I think it's in the beta testing phase now. There are people around the world who are testing it out and using it. I think it's not fully unfurled though yet. It's not available to everybody, and they're going to keep launching satellites until they get it fully up and running. But it is a huge part of SpaceX's grand plan. It's like they envision it as providing them with enough money to do their Mars colonization stuff, which is what Elon Musk wants to do more than anything. So that's why they dreamed up Starlink. It's said to be providing like a very vital service to people, true, but it's also its goal within like the whole SpaceX system is to raise enough money for them to fund their Mars colonization project.
And so if you get this when it's really up and running, it will cost you money. You'll pay each month, but you'll be able to get service where you couldn't before, I imagine. And even in big cities, would people use this, or would it make much more sense to use, you know, like broadband or, you know, cable, whatever is available?
They would certainly say it makes more sense. Their plan, SpaceX's plan, is for it to be cheap enough and fast enough that pretty much everybody's going to want it. And we will see if that happens. You know, it's said to be faster than sort of typical satellite internet, because most satellite internet is using really high orbiting geostationary satellites, which are like 22,000 miles up. And these are in low Earth orbit, so they're a lot lower down, only a few hundred miles. So there's not the same latency. It's a lot faster for the signals to get down to you. So it's better for like online gameplay and stuff like that, where you need fast internet connections. That's what they say. And they also say that once the system is mature, it'll be pretty cheap. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see if that happens.
So it's literally supposed to be fast. Like when you say gaming, I mean, that's got to be good, high quality internet, like, you know, like you're getting from, say, a cable modem in your house or something like that, which costs a good amount of money right now. You have to, there must be some sort of receiver, though. Is it like a dish, like the dish networks are that you put on your roof right now or something like that?
Yeah, they actually sell you, with your subscription to the service, they send you like a little pack, and it's got a little mini satellite dish that you put on your roof or your deck or like whatever. And you just point it to the sky, and you can get the signals in your own home.
That sounds pretty fascinating. We're speaking with Mike Wall. He's a senior writer at space.com. We'll jump back to Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos. Both are supposed to launch here in the next 2 weeks. Branson just in a couple of days, and Bezos on the 20th. But their companies are sort of fighting over what this means and all of these things. Also an interesting story just recently about who Bezos is taking to space with him. Lots more to do after we get a check of the news here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala back with you on 720 WGN. We're chatting with Mike Wall. He's a senior writer at space.com. We've been talking about the billionaires that are headed to space. Mike, I know that overall these things are, I don't even know if they're considered safe or not. They're safe, but accidents happen at a greater rate certainly than airplanes and things like that, because those are taking off all the time and landing all the time safely. And accidents do happen in space. And even with these companies, they've had things blow up on launch pads and not land correctly and all of those things. And that Bezos and Branson are both doing these flights. I know their companies have done them successfully, but do you think within the companies themselves, there's some consternation? Because if something goes wrong on one of these two flights, that kind of probably ends either company and possibly could end, or at least certainly curtail quite a bit, how much progress is being made right now by all these private companies.
I would imagine some people are nervous. Yeah, this is a really big deal. You know, both of these companies are really doing very high profile things, putting their sort of billionaire founders on their vehicles. Yeah, if anything goes wrong, it's going to be a catastrophe. Obviously, they don't think that's going to happen, or they wouldn't be taking this step. But I'm sure that they also know, as everybody should, that spaceflight is a hard thing. There's such high energies involved, even on these missions, which aren't going into Earth orbit. They're just going up to suborbital space and back down again, which is not nearly as hard as getting up into Earth orbit, like to the space station or something. It's still way more energy than is expended by like a 747 or something just going up in the air. And so if like anything goes wrong and some of that energy gets out in a way that it's not supposed to, yeah, it can be catastrophic. So I'm sure people within the companies are nervous. I'm sure that they know the stakes are incredibly high, that if something goes wrong, it could be the end of their business, or at least this aspect of their business. But I also think that they wouldn't be taking this step if they weren't confident that it was going to work.
Okay, so Richard Branson's taken off here in a couple of days. Virgin Galactic, according to the CNBC story I saw today, flies at about 262,000 feet. So they go up, they're in the air for a while. How long these flights that Bezos or Branson will be on, how long is the flight? Is this like a number of hours? Is this over a day?
It varies for each of them. So both of them, they're like different systems. So the one that's going to happen Sunday, Virgin Galactic, is a space plane that's carried up off the ground. It's carried up by a carrier plane. And so it takes off on a runway, and then at about 50,000 feet, it gets dropped by the carrier plane. And then the actual spacecraft, it fires up its rocket motor and blasts itself up to suborbital space and then comes down on the runway itself. And so that's a little longer experience than what like New Shepard does, which is just like the standard rocket with a capsule on top. The Virgin Galactic whole trip is like an hour and a half, I believe, from takeoff to landing. But the spaceflight kind of part of it is like probably about 11 minutes or something like that, and you get about 4 minutes of weightlessness. And for the Blue Origin experience, I think the entire thing is about 11 minutes, and they have a comparable amount of time where they're weightless. So it's a little different experience, but the spaceflight component of each of them is fairly comparable in terms of how much time you're technically like in space and being weightless. That's fairly comparable for both of the systems.
So when Bezos goes up from takeoff from the ground to landing, is going to be about 11 minutes altogether?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is crazy. Okay. So now what they're fighting about is that so Bezos had previously announced he's doing it. Then Branson comes out, hey, I'm going 9 days earlier. I'm going to be the first one. But now Bezos' company, Blue Origin, is like, yours doesn't even count. You're going like 50,000 feet less than the air, or a little bit more than that. So Virgin Galactic will fly an apex, I guess, sort of. Is that how we'd say you go up and then you kind of apex a little bit and then start coming back down? They're going to go at 262,000 feet, which is what the U.S. recognizes as the boundary of space. Blue Origin, Bezos' company, will go 328,000 feet, which is commonly known as is it pronounced Kármán line?
Yeah, yeah.
And what is the Kármán line?
See, yeah, this is pretty funny. So both of them technically reach space if you go by the definition of the U.S. military or NASA. They give astronaut wings to anybody that gets above 50 miles. And so, Virgin Galactic gets above 50 miles. They go up to about 54, 55 miles. But there's this thing called the Kármán line, which was, it's like this sort of calculation about where space begins is actually where sort of orbital dynamics overtake aerodynamic forces in determining the trajectory of an object. And some people have calculated that that's around 62 miles or like 100 kilometers. But other people are like, that's kind of nonsense. That was just an approximation. It was like an order of magnitude thing because 100 kilometers was a nice round number, so they chose that. And other people think that actually the Kármán line is calculated more precisely at around 50 miles. So there are some people who say that the Kármán line is actually about 50 miles. So this whole conversation about Kármán line, non-Kármán line is totally moot. It's just sort of funny. It's become a talking point because Blue Origin is using it as a way to differentiate themselves from Virgin Galactic and say, you should fly with us. You won't have an asterisk on your name because you will really be going to space. Whereas Virgin Galactic, you'll be forever, you'll have a little mark saying, actually, didn't reach the Kármán line, so kind of a waste. So it's just like a battle between these two companies about what space and what's an astronaut. And it's just, yeah, it's pretty predictable, actually, that it would reach this point because they're in pretty intense competition with each other.
So throughout this article, they talk about the difference between the two and what it means to be that further up and whether or not it should be. They quote somebody who says there's really only one place that sticks to the 100 kilometers, one official place, and it's not international law. But Blue Origin says for 96% of the world's population, space begins at 100 kilometers and up.
I don't know where they got that number. Are they just saying that the entire world except the United States recognizes the 100 kilometers? I'm not sure. Yeah, they actually just that day like said that in a tweet today, and I'm not sure where they get that number.
Yeah, it is interesting. And so they put out this tweet like they're going after, and it cracks me up because I don't imagine they're selling tickets next week, so I don't know why they're making such a big deal out of this right now, but they. You know, that Blue Origin flies above the Kármán line. The vehicle type is a rocket. The Galactic's just a high-altitude airplane. And Blue Origin has the largest windows in space, 42 inches by 28 inches. And Galactic just has these airplane-sized windows, nothing you can even look out of. Blue Origin has an escape system. Galactic doesn't. Something goes wrong, you're done. Blue Origin has minimal impact on the ozone layer, while Galactic has a high impact. And that the Blue Origin's had 15 safe flights, and Galactic's only had 3 safe flights above 80 kilometers. So,
yeah.
I guess I'm buying my tickets on Blue Origin instead of Virgin Galactic, is what they're saying.
They're a business, and they're trying to convince you to fly with them. And it seems pretty clear that they are a little bit miffed about the whole Branson coming in and going on July 11th to. Steal that thunder away from Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin. I mean, it was pretty clear that the original plan from the point of view of Blue Origin anyway was to make a huge splash with their announcement because they chose July 20th. You know, that's the anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, and then they announced a little later that actually Bezos is going to be on the flight, and they also held like this high profile auction and say you can buy the fourth seat on this flight. You can fly with Jeff and his brother Mark. And that seat sold for $28 million. So they had this whole unveiling for their big first human spaceflight.
MapleBall here with you on 720 WGN. We had a little technical difficulty there. Ben's trying to get Mike Wall back on and ready to go here. So we'll do a little bit more with him here in just a couple of minutes on 720 WGN. But I just do think it is fascinating. And I don't know what you all think. Would you jump onto a space flight? Ben and I have been talking here. Ben's all into this and air shows and everything. So I think he would think about doing something like this. For me, I don't know. I can't get on a roller coaster. Frankly, I have trouble on the swing set anymore. If I get too high, my stomach starts hurting. So I can't imagine how I would ever be able to handle the idea of going ahead and getting on one of these rocket ships. And the interesting thing to me is that, you know, Bezos's one is a quick flight. Branson's is a very long flight because you get up there and then you take off from there. That seems a little more fun to me than just although I guess some people just want to be on a rocket ship and blast off into space. That these companies are starting to fight against each other about who owns superiority when they're so far away is just really amazing to me. So we'll get Mike Wall from space.com back on here in just a couple of minutes. After the midnight news, a little bit afterwards, we're going to speak with Roger Bennett. There is a podcast and video series called Men in Blazers. It's guys talking about, you know, Premier League soccer, European football, as they say. And he is now an American citizen, and he talks about how this was the most important thing he feels that he has done in his life. Going ahead and becoming himself an American citizen. It means that much to him. He grew up in the 80s in Liverpool, desperate to live in America. He grew up on Chicago Bears football. And he tells the story that his family originally immigrated out of the Ukraine and planned to head to Chicago. His great-grandpa was a butcher, and so they wanted to come to Chicago. But supposedly, who knows how much of this is urban legend or not, the boat docked in Liverpool on the way. And they saw a big building, they said Chicago, and they got out. And lo and behold, they should have been Chicagoans. He became friends with a kid from Chicago, had visited somebody else in England, became pen pals, got to spend a summer here in Chicago, actually got to meet some of the Bears, and He turned this lifelong passion into, as soon as he graduated from college here, he came to the U.S., and he's made his life here ever since. His name is Roger Bennett, and we will talk about his book, Reborn in the USA, An Englishman's Love Letter to America, after a little bit after midnight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Again, it's great weather weekend in Chicago. A lot of good things to get out and do and enjoy the city. So get out and do it while you can. We talked earlier in the show with Dr. William Schaffner about the Delta variant and everything else that's going on. I'm reading a story in National Geographic that now there's a Delta variant plus, that, you know, another mutation, another thing. But the real problem is, and the real danger is, for those who aren't vaccinated. So far, people who have been vaccinated are doing relatively okay with all of this. So if you don't have an objection or reason, if you're just delaying doing it, but you keep meaning to do it, go ahead and get out there and get that done with. Okay, Ben's got it all set up. We'll have Mike Wall back next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubal here with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Mike Wall, senior writer at space.com. We're talking about Richard Branson headed to space, Jeff Bezos headed to space. So for, I guess let's talk about Bezos' flight since he is taking tourists with him. What is flight like? I know Branson's testing this out, seeing how the champagne tastes at these heights. But what is this like? Do they have to go through any training, any special training, or is this going to, for the guy that paid $28 million, is he just, you know, punching a ticket and getting on the Skyway and jumping on this thing? How's it work for them?
Well, they are going to have to do some sort of training. Like, I remember when the Blue Origin auction was first announced and they said you can bid to be the to get the fourth seat, they like released some kind of rules and sort of regulations about the requirements that you had to meet. They were pretty minimal, you know. They were like, you have to be able to climb 7 flights of stairs, get up to the top of the launch tower, and that sort of thing. And there is some training involved, but the idea is for it to be pretty plug and play, so they can get as many customers as possible on this thing. And the fact that they're putting like an 82-year-old person on this flight is probably also meant to show that you can be any age, as long as you're in relatively decent shape, then you can make this trip. And I mean, Wally Funk is not a normal person. She's extremely accomplished, and so she's probably in better shape than most of us will be when we're her age. But she is pretty elderly, so it's probably intended to show that a lot of people can do this space flight if they want to and have the money.
Well, and do we know yet who spent $28 million?
No, they haven't announced that person yet, and I think that's part of the unveiling, part of the media campaign was to announce that closer to the date. And so there'll be another chance for people to talk about this flight and like, oh, this is the person who paid $28 million for the flight. We don't know who that person is yet.
And do you have any guesses? Is this going to be some, you know, rich oil magnate from the Middle East? Is it, what's your guess on this?
I don't know, but a lot of people are speculating on Twitter, or at least thinking it would be funny if it was Elon Musk. It would be pretty hilarious. if like he bought the seat and he's just going to make fun of Jeff Bezos the entire way up, saying it's only suborbital and it's over in 11 minutes. What? But yeah, he's a world class troll. Elon Musk is, but I don't think he would use $28 million. I think he's probably a little too careful with his money.
I don't know. $28 million is like you or I throwing a few quarters around for him. But I wouldn't think he would do that either. And I would think that Blue Origin would have found some way to sort of nix that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. That would not go well with their marketing campaign, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't think it would either. How much did Virgin Galactic need something like this? I don't know. And I don't even know how much PR means when you don't truly have something to sell right now. It doesn't matter until I can actually purchase something from the company. A splash right now doesn't mean anything, I don't think, 3 years from now. So was it important that Virgin Galactic get its name back out there a little bit? Because you and I have not talked about Virgin Galactic, I wouldn't think, on the radio in the last couple of years. We've talked about Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and their companies a lot, but we don't talk about Virgin Galactic.
Well, that's partly because they hadn't done like a space flight in a long time. You know, they did their first two space flights, test flights, were in December 2018 and February 2019, and then there was a more than 2 year gap before they did their third one this past May. So there was a lot of speculation about why are they waiting so long? You know, they were saying that they were just putting the finishing touches on the space plane, and they also moved it to their commercial operations hub, which is in New Mexico, Spaceport America. All their previous flights had been from California. So from a different spaceport there. So that was part of what was going on, was they were moving to the commercial site and getting ready and getting that all up and running. But yeah, that took time, and the fact that they didn't fly for more than 2 years, at least to space, there was not as much reason to talk about them. And this is a big deal for them getting back in the, I mean, they're a business. So they're trying to gin up customer interest. And I mean, I think it is important for them to get their name out there now, because they're gearing up toward commercial operations soon. You know, if this flight goes well, and then a couple more, they have a couple more test flights planned, and then they're going to start commercial operations. And I would imagine if this flight goes well, they're going to start selling tickets again. At various points in the past, they've opened ticket sales, and they say they've had more than 700 people buy seats. So, if these test flights go well, if this next one even goes well, they very well might open up ticket sales again and get more people's name on the list and get that customer list a lot longer.
So for either of these flights, say people are on board, they will be soon for Branson, they are going to be for Jeff Bezos on this one. What could you expect? What have you heard that? I know there's a couple minutes of weightlessness. Do you get to unbuckle during that? Do you float around and truly feel it during that? Bezos' thing is only 11 minutes, so clearly there's no drinks, there's no anything. Is Branson planning more like kind of a international travel that eventually will be kind of like, you know, dressed well and you're having drinks and looking out at space? What are the visions for what these are going to be?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the entire customer experience is going to be. I think the entire experience is going to be longer than just the space flight. I think for both companies, they will have, like, they'll have customers come out to the site like a couple days ahead of time, and there'll be group activities probably and fancy dinners, I would imagine, and there'll be a big event and a big build up and all that. So there's probably a lot of stuff in advance of the space flight just to get people situated and get people just to sort of feel that they're about to do something very special. Yeah, I think that they all will be allowed to unbuckle and float around when they're at the apex, and they're able to be weightless. I think on both vehicles, you will be encouraged to do that, and most people will. But yeah, as far as drinks and stuff, like, I don't know, probably on both flights, I can't imagine that they're long enough to really sit back and enjoy a drink. Maybe on Virgin Galactic. I'm not sure though.
Yeah, because that one takes a little while to get up there, and then once you do it. But it will be very interesting. The whole, you know what, that whole thing I'm reading about the back and forth between the two, the windows does matter. I mean, if I'm going up there, I want to be able to really look at space, not through some tiny porthole, but through some big, more like, you know, huge monitor-sized window. I see that being a sticking point for Virgin Galactic. I think they need to fix that.
It's important. And for both of these companies, you know, some of what they say is the chief selling points for this trip is, you know, every astronaut who goes up and sees Earth against the blackness of space and really gets a full idea of our planet in its natural state. You know, we are this lonely island of life in this vast blackness of space, and seeing that starkly like that does change you. And that's part of the selling point for these companies, is that, like, you will get the overview effect. You know, you will be changed by this experience, and that experience centers on seeing Earth as it truly is. So yeah, people will doubtless be looking out those windows the entire time. I certainly would be. I haven't been aboard either vehicle really, but I would imagine that the windows on the Virgin Galactic space plane do give you a pretty good view, even if they're quite a bit smaller than the Blue Origin ones.
You definitely don't want the aisle seat on either of these. I'm just joking. I'm sure there's not an aisle seat on either. You're paying a little too much money for
that. Yeah.
Mike Wall is a senior writer at space.com. We always appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. Sure thing. I'll talk to you later.
And we'll get you into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next here on 720 WGN.